apply what's going on in Psalm chapter 20 to the condition of our nation here today as we sit, as we... in their history. And I want to make sure you understand America is facing a crisis in our history today. A crisis unlike one we've ever seen. And it's been that way now for several months. It is intensifying, though, as we move forward. As we come into this week, we are facing a crisis. There are some wonderful truths that we can all learn from this particular chapter, this division in the Word of God. And it is telling us about how the people need to address our leaders and what we need to expect from our leaders as we face the crisis of our nation, just as Israel was facing the crisis of their nation. Psalm chapter 20, it is really divided into two separate sections. And there are several principles that are given to us in each division. I want to share two thoughts with you this morning. I'm going to break the homiletic guidelines. I'm going to share two thoughts with you this morning. And in these two thoughts, the first one is going to deal with the people addressing their leaders, the king, their government. The second thought is going to deal with the government, the king's response to the people. We the people, I want you to listen closely as we study this, and we'll learn some wonderful truth from God's Word. Write down, first of all, if you would, we see the accountability of leadership. Did you know that there should be accountability to leadership? It doesn't matter what there is. There ought to be an accountability to leadership in whatever facet. In verses 1 through 5, we find the people of God, the people of Israel. The people of Israel, they were making a plea. I'll even call it here this morning. They were making demands to their government, their king, to their leadership, and how they expected, the people expected, the leaders to approach the imminent crisis that they were facing in this time. Now, listen carefully. Crisis in a nation, it is not something that is brand new and is just a novelty thing to us today that we are facing. No, no. From the very establishment of nations, there has always been a crisis of some form. So what does that tell us? It tells us that it is not the crisis necessarily that defines a nation and delivers a nation. It is the approach to the crisis that will define a nation and deliver a nation from the things that they may be facing in their threat. Israel had some expectations that they were placing upon their leadership, and they were holding them accountable to those things. Thomas Paine said it this way, he did it well, when he said, a body of men holding themselves accountable to nobody ought to be trusted by nobody. A body of men accounting themselves to nobody ought not to be trusted by anybody. Now in these first five verses, I see five principles that are given to us that we the people must do when we are addressing the leaders of our nation. It's outlined so beautifully in the Word of God. There's no way to ignore, though, that when we look at Psalm chapter 20, the first thing that the people did is they had a humble prayer. They had a humble prayer, though we find not the word prayer that is used in this division of the book of Psalms. It is a psalm of prayer. For verse number 1 declares to us, the Lord hear thee. Can you sense the prayer that is there? The Lord hear thee in the day of trouble. They were facing their crisis. When we find ourselves in trouble, I bet every one of you will agree with me, that's when we want God to hear us, right? We don't seem to care that much about God hearing our prayers when everything's just doing great in our lives. We don't have a problem in the world. And when you find yourself in a time of trouble, that's when we want God to hear us. It's amazing. I mean, it's remarkable how spiritually minded some of our carnal hearts actually become when we get ourselves in a big mess of trouble. The number one principle, the number one priority of God's people when facing a crisis in holding our leadership accountable, it ought to be prayer. Hey, we learned that. Don't ever forget, that's what we're going to meet to do tomorrow night. We're going to come together and we are going to pray and call out to God. Now listen now, if we do not pray for our leaders, we have absolutely no business criticizing our leaders. Don't ever let a negative word come out of your mouth unless you're willing to pray for your leaders. Prayer is the first step in getting God to step in and pull us out of the mess that we have now found ourselves in. God's the only one that can help us now. He told us that if my people, which are called by my name, will humble themselves and pray a humble prayer, he said, you got to call out to me. I'm asking you today, are you praying for your leaders? Have you been praying as you never have before? As we approach this season, friend, the patriotic American is a praying American. You ought to call out to God as we approach these next 48 hours. Beg God to intervene in a way that we've never seen before, to do His work and His will His very way. It all started with the people right here. They had a humble prayer, but then the people made their demand further by giving them a higher power that they said that the leader must recognize. That higher power. Look further in verse number 1. The name of the God of Jacob defend thee. The name of the God of Jacob defend thee. It is here that the people, or we'll call it we the people, we begin telling the leaders in Israel, they were beginning to tell the leaders that they had some spiritual expectations for their leaders that they expected them to follow. They weren't dancing around it. They were saying, look, we expect you to do some things, Mr. King. We expect you to do some things, Mr. President. We expect you to do some things, candidates for Congress or whomever it is. We expect. People were saying to the leader right here, they were saying, look, hey, we totally understand that you occupy the palace. We totally understand, and in a sort, you have the power over the purse. We understand that you have the authority over the might of the military and all of its planning. We understand that you have the rule over us, and we accept all of those things. But though we accept all of those things, we will not accept you not being a spiritual man. And so the leaders of the people were talking to the leaders, and they were saying, listen, we want to ask you directly right now, do you believe in a higher power? Do you believe in the God of Jacob? If you do not believe in the God of Jacob, the living God of all the universe, you have no business leading our nation as we head into a moment of crisis. It's so interesting to me, it really is, how David, the author of this, the king of the great nation during this time, did you notice how he invokes the name Jacob right here? That's the name that he evokes. He doesn't invoke Abraham. He invokes the name Jacob in this text and in this passage. It's amazing to me because especially in his earlier years, Jacob would not have been the guy who would have had the testimony of godliness. Jacob was a liar. He was a trickster. He was a scheming thief. He was a cheat. And in spite of that reputation, in spite of that in those early years, I find it amazing how that God, in spite of all of that, God still confronted Jacob. He crippled Jacob. He consecrated Jacob. And then he commissioned Jacob to go out and do something big and to do something great. God had been perfectly justified by going out and finding just about anybody other than Jacob to go out and do a mighty work. But no, God looked at Jacob. He saw a broken person, somebody who didn't have it all together, somebody who had a colorful past as much as anybody ever had in the Bible. He looked and he saw Jacob. And you know what he did? He anointed Jacob and he called Jacob and allowed Jacob to bring into the world one of the greatest men that would ever live. God allowed Jacob to give us Joseph. By the way, an Old Testament picture of Jesus Christ himself. And God allowed this man Joseph to step onto the stage of history and literally save the entire world. God used this trickster, this liar, this man Jacob. See, the people of God in this text right here, they were not expecting their leaders to be perfect. They weren't expecting them to have everything lined out, but they did expect them to honor and trust and believe the living God of Israel, the God of Jacob. And I submit to our hearts this morning that every leader that ever occupies the White House, every leader that ever walks the halls of Congress, ever sits in the governor's mansions or anywhere in the mayor's offices of our nation, they ought to be required by the people to honor the God of heaven. I was listening to President Trump speak just the other day in Greenville, North Carolina. Maybe some of you saw it as well. He was, of course, out rallying his base and rallying his crowd in the middle of his rally that he was in, he was talking about the virus that we have all been faced and been dealing with various aspects of. And in the rally, he made these comments. He said, look, all of our professionals are telling us that there are precautions that we can take, we should take, and such things. However, he said this, they are not foolproof. It doesn't matter. Take every precaution you can, and there is still a chance that you may get this virus. Then he said this, ultimately, the only thing that is going to spare you from this virus is the boss. Pointing his fingers toward the heavens. And then he went on to tell the story about how someone had recently come up to him. And how someone had said, Mr. Trump, you are the most famous man in the world. Some of you may have seen this. You are the most famous man in the world. To which the president responded and he said, oh, no, no, no. Jesus Christ is far more famous than I. And we must always keep him first. Now, I say that very cautiously because there are a lot of things about Mr. Trump that I simply do not like. I do not appreciate. And I imagine everybody that's got any biblical basis about them at all would have to agree with that. I don't think anybody can adequately argue the fact that this man has stood for the God of heaven. And he has not done anything to hinder the people of God in moving forward in what God has called us to do. He has been a man who has acknowledged God, and he has stood with God's people in all of these various ways. He said, I believe in a higher power. When I think about what we're facing this week, as I listened to him give that speech, tears swelled up in my eyes. There was a peace that came over my heart in that time, realizing that here was the president, the leader of the free world, acknowledging there was a higher power, and it was Jesus Christ. That, ladies and gentlemen, is what the people in Israel were requiring. You see, God can take an old liar, an old trickster, an old scheming cheat, especially in his early years, and set him on the world stage for the purpose of saving a nation and saving the entire world. The people of God went to praying. They had a humble prayer. They said, we require a higher power. Then they told him that there will be a helpful presence if he'll do that. A helpful presence. Look in verse number 2. He said, the people are telling the king here in verse number 2, send thee help from the sanctuary and strengthen thee out of Zion. What a wonderful, wonderful verse of Scripture. And when we see these words sanctuary, it's not in those Old Testament days, the sanctuary we think of today that we've been tearing apart and put back together this past week. There is a common reference that we can look at it in parallel to what we have today. But that word sanctuary, it is actually referring to this, listen now, a sacred consecrated place or a place, a holy place that has been set aside in society for the reverence of God. I would submit to our hearts that's what this place is. A place set aside in society for the reverence of God or a place where God is lifted up. This word Zion that we see, it is the military stronghold. It's set over the east side, really, of Jerusalem, looking over the city. I remember as we were heading up to the Mount of Olives this past year in Israel, I noticed a sign off in the distance, and we started to turn down the road, and we headed up Mount Zion that was there, that's set overlooking the city. That was a stronghold, a military defense that was there. Remember, they were facing in this day a conflict in their future. It was a battle that was looming and imminent in their day. And what really the people of God were saying when they said, send the help from the sanctuary. The people of God were telling their leader, they were saying, the only way that you're going to be able to get any help, the only way deliverance is ever going to come is from this very living God of heaven. I want you to listen to me. There is nothing wrong whatsoever, and don't forget this, there is nothing wrong with the people holding our leaders accountable. And putting them, ladies and gentlemen, under a public record of saying that they believe in the living God of heaven. There's nothing wrong with making them admit the fact they are not trusting entirely in their economic advisors. They are not trusting entirely in the Joint Chiefs or the military might or even the education of all of the scientists and all that stuff that is out there. No, no. They are listening and they are giving their whole heart and their whole attention to the living God, understanding that's the only place where any help is ever going to come from. And don't you ever forget that. That's the only way that we're going to see anything happen in our land. It's going to come from God. It's not going to come from anybody else. God is going to have to step in. God is going to have to intervene. The people here, they went to praying. They had a humble prayer. They said, "We require you, Mr. King, to have a higher power that you believe in, because that higher power is going to give the helpful presence to bring us through this." But then they told him as well, "You had better have a holy profession yourself." A holy profession. Look in verse number 3. Look at this. "Remember all thy offerings and accept thy burnt sacrifice, Selah." For those of you that may not know what that word Selah is saying, stop and think about that, what he said. Meditate on that. Remember those things that you've said in the past that you believed that got you to this place that you're at. Selah, dwell on that. Verse number 4, "Grant thee according to thine own heart and fulfill all thy counsel." In other words, give the desire of what your true heart really is. It's going to be revealed to us in their time of crisis. The people were here demanding that their leaders, their king, David, they did not have some fake hypocritical profession of who the living God was. Some empty profession. Some empty type of promises that they were giving people as they were ascending the ladder of power in their day. They were saying, "We don't want any of that kind of stuff. We want you to have a full confidence in who God is, and we want you right now to have a straight thought in your mind on who God really is." You see, you need to remember, ladies and gentlemen, that the people of the nations are the ones that pay the price for the bad decisions that a leader will make. You and I are going to pay the price for bad. Now, ultimately, they'll be judged, of course. But you and I, in our nation today, we will pay the price for bad decisions that leaders make. What the people of God are saying to their leader right here, they say, "Hey, listen, Mr. King, King David, we want you to remember the commitments that you had made to God as a young man." They knew who he was. And that you had grown up believing in the living God. And they were saying, "We want you to honor those commitments, and what is in your heart is going to come out in the outcome of the conflict that we are facing." In other words, who you really are will be exposed by the outcome of our conflict. They were saying, "We don't want you at all right now. We're not expecting you to go and believe in a God. That's not good enough. We don't want you to go out there and have the politically correct approach of saying that it can be this God or that God or this God or that God. No, we don't care about offending anybody else that is out there." They were saying, "We don't care if you offend the God of the Philistines. We don't care if you offend the God of the Syrians. It doesn't matter at all. We want you to honor the living God." We've gotten so correct in our day that we have missed the fact there is not a bunch of gods. There is one God. And the greatest day in our nation's life will be when we come to the point where we just simply say, "We're not worried about honoring all these other gods. We are honoring the living God, the true God of heaven, the God of Jacob." And the people went to pray. I mean, they were calling out to God. They were praying. They had a humble prayer, saying, "We demand a higher power. There'll be a helpful presence, a holy profession from you. You've got to believe. It's not good enough for you just to say it. You've got to prove it. You belong to God. And when you do those things, we will then honor you in the position that you are in." There was an honorable position, they told them. Look further at verse number 5. "We will rejoice in thy salvation. And in the name of our God, we will set up our banners." Isn't that interesting? You see that word banners that is given to us here? The word banner, it is speaking of the standard bearer among 10,000. The standard bearer among 10,000. In this ancient culture of Jewish history, part of what the leader would do to rally the people when they were facing the conflict and the crisis is they would have this massive ceremony, this massive assembly. We'll call it a pep rally of sorts. Could we do that? Where all of the people would gather together. And basically what the king would do is there would be a banner that would be dropped down, and it would show that there is a declaration of war that they are making. But in the context of this passage, what the people are really saying right here is, look, Mr. King, not only are you going to do this, but if you will just honor God, we ourselves, did you notice that? We ourselves are going to have a banner that we are going to put down as well. In other words, we are going to stand with you. As long as you follow and honor God, we are going to follow and honor you. But when you cease to follow and honor God, we will cease to follow and honor you, and we will scatter from your leadership. These folks at this point, somehow in the nation of Israel, they evidently had some real God about them. They were holding their leaders accountable. They say, we weren't going to let, we'll overrun the palace if we had to. We're not going to let you keep power if you're going to take us down a road that doesn't lead to the living God. What would happen in America today if the people would hold our leaders accountable that way? What would happen in America today if that would be the case? Imagine how God would pour out His blessings on our land. If every one of us, every American, every believer raided the Washington headliners, raided, in our case, Atlanta, and all of these other places, and said, no, we expect you to honor the living God of heaven. Nothing else is going to be acceptable. Now listen, we're talking about the accountability of leadership. Don't you ever let anybody challenge you on the fact that the people of God or the church has to be silent in what goes on in our nation. And when everybody does or anybody does, you take them directly to the words of Psalm 20 and say in the first 5 verses, here's what God's people had to say. You have a voice. You let that voice be heard unapologetically that we require our leaders to trust and believe God, no matter what it is. Can we get some airflow in here, please, fellas? If we do that, please, thank you for your help on that. We've just talked right now about the accountability of leadership. But notice, secondly, with me, the sustainability of lordship. There is the sustainability of lordship. Now, in verses 1 through 5, we find the people talking to the leader, and they are using words like they, thy, and we. But then the conversation changes. It's remarkable the way it does. It changes because the whole conversation makes an alteration from the people talking to the leader, and now the leader is responding to the people. And one of the ways we know that is we start seeing words like I. In this final division, the leaders have now heard what the people said, we the people. But now we find the leaders responding to the people. What did the leader, what did the king say back to the people? He told them, first of all, he gave them a comforting truth. A comforting truth. Look in verse number 6. We move now to this point in our study. Now look at what David says back here. Now know I that the Lord saveth His anointed. David says, now I know who you are. Now I know where you stand. What you expect of me. And hey, folks, relax. Let me give you some comfort here, he says. I'm so glad we're on the same page. I'm on board with everything that you just said. I totally agree with it in every way. You don't have to worry about it. I'm on track with who you are right now. We're not going to go separate directions in any way. Look back at verse number 6 further. He says, he will hear. David's talking here. He will hear from his holy heavens. God's going to hear from me, he's telling his people. With the saving strength of His right hand. And David is saying, hey, my dear people, you don't have to worry about your voices only being heard by God, but God is going to hear my voice as well. In other words, I know that my help comes from God. I'm going to have a profession of the living God. What did the people do? The people looked to their leader. Their leader looked to the Lord. You rest assured, ladies and gentlemen, when you've got a combination like that, there is no way that you're going to go down. There is no way that the nation is going to crumble. When you've got the people saying we expect lordship and the leader is looking back and saying, you got it. We're going to give lordship, glory and honor to God. You can rest assured that it'll never fail, a combination like that. They weren't in some type of controversy right here. They weren't going to be some competitive group of people. There wasn't going to be any type of departmental turf wars that they were going to have. No. They said, we are joining together in unity for the one common cause of the work of God. We will not be divided, is what they're saying. Now listen carefully. A divided nation will never succeed. A divided nation will never succeed. A lot's been said about the division that we're facing in America today, and there is a lot of it. We are divided racially, economically, socially, scientifically, religiously, politically. There is division on every side of it. But listen very carefully. So much of the division that we are experiencing right now in our country is all based on things that violate the truth of the Word of God. And the division that we are seeing out there right now, it is not right. The hate that is out there, the riots that is out there, the crime that is out there, it is not right. What do you do in the middle of a society that is so badly divided? Listen, and I want you to write this down as we go into this future week and as we face any crisis. Listen very closely. I would far, far rather be divided by truth than united by error. I would far, far rather be divided by truth than united by error. In other words, I'd rather stand on the truth of God above anything else that would calm anything else down that is looped and that is rooted in error. We've got to become a people that begin to stand for what is right. What we are experiencing in our world today is not right. And by God's grace, I have made a choice. I have made a decision that I am not going to bend, bow, or borrow from what is right. We will do what is right. As we continue to study the text, the word saveth blesses my heart. Because when you look at that word, you will notice that it is given in the past tense. In other words, the leader right here, he is comforting his people and he is letting them know that the battle has already been won. Before the first shot was fired, the first arrow was let go, the first sword was drawn, the first spear was thrown. The battle had already been won. He's already saved us, folks. Are you listening? He's already saved us, they're saying. The king is telling his people, hey, I'm giving you a comforting truth. It's truth, by the way. It's not error. It's not rumor. It's not politics. It's truth. And he's saying, I am telling you the battle, it's already won. Hey, my dear people, right now, I'm just telling you the king is saying the banner ceremony, the deployment of truth, the engagement of battle, those are all just a bunch of formalities because the battle was truly won the very moment that the people and the leader came together and determined that they were going to abide by the lordship of God and there was nothing that was going to be able to take them down no matter what it was. The battle was already won. Let me encourage you today. One way or another, the battle is already won. I stand on the side of the mighty cross and the battle has been won. May we all learn this wonderful truth, though. May we learn that many, many of the battles that we are fighting today are won in our yesterday. May we learn that our tomorrows will dictate, our todays will dictate the victories of our tomorrow. However we are living our life today will determine how many battles we're going to fight tomorrow and how many battles we are going to win tomorrow. The reason many of us are losing some of the battles and the defeats that we're having in our life today is because of some decisions that we made way back in our yesterday. And we're struggling right now. Anybody who is living in sin openly in your life, you rest assured you are giving a defeat to you in your future. And there's going to come a day when you're going to look back when you are in the ashes of your life. And you're going to look and you're going to say, dear God, where did I go wrong? But if you really think long enough, God's going to take you back to a day when you had a choice not to pick up that drink, a choice not to take that drug, a choice not to hang with that person. And you're going to pay the price in your tomorrow for what you did today. What the king is telling his people right here is, hey, We've made a choice today, therefore our tomorrow is secure. It's going to be all right. All the battles we would win in our life, all the battles we would win in our nation, if the people and the leaders would acknowledge the Lordship of Christ and saying that He has full control no matter what. The King responds to His people and He says, relax. I'm on your side. We're together on this. And here's a comforting truth to prove it. Then He tells them about a complete trust. Somehow in your flesh right now, you're going to be struggling what's really going to be the outcome of the conflict. Don't. I'm giving you this comforting truth. There is a complete trust. That helps me today. There is a complete trust. It brings us back to our text verse. Verse number 7. Look at it. Some trust in chariots, some in horses, but we will remember the name of the Lord our God. I bet many of us have read that verse time after time after time in our lives without understanding the context by which it was written and given to us. David is telling his people right here, not only can you have a complete trust, a comforting trust, but a comforting truth, but there is a complete trust that you can have. David is saying all of our enemies that are out there, they are going to trust in their horses, their chariots, you know, their man-made means of defense. And that's fine. That's their choice. But we, ladies and gentlemen, we of our kingdom, we will trust in the living God of heaven. You don't have to worry about your king relying on his economic advisors, the joint chiefs, or any type of our military might, or anything else. I'm trusted in God. God alone. He uses that word trust there, but look at that word remember. Isn't it interesting? You'd think when you're reading this verse, some trust in chariots, some trust in horses, but we will trust the name of the Lord our God. It'd be easy to use the word trust there. Why does he use the word remember? Isn't that interesting? Trust just seems to fit. The word remember just simply means recognize. Our nation recognizes God. It's not just coming from the palace. It's not just coming from the people. Our nation recognizes God. And what the king was saying right here, that no matter what may come up, we're not going to trust anything else because we're going to remember the God of heaven that brought us to this land, the God that established this nation, and the God that is going to deliver us from the conflict that we are facing. We're going to trust God. I'm going to remember Him, having you know that God has delivered you time and time and time again in your life. How quickly can we just forget that thing? We just forget it. We don't remember how good God's been. We don't recognize how He's intervened and He stepped into the middle of our lives when we needed Him the most. Now, just be a little bit more personal with us right now. Do you really trust in the Lord for whatever you're facing in your life? You dreading going to work tomorrow because of what you're going to have to face. You dreading going to the doctor because of what you're going to have to face. You're dreading going home because what you're going to have to face with husband, wife, children, or whatever it may be. Are you really trusting in God for everything to bring you through? Remember, the battles of tomorrow are won today. The story is told of a young girl who was traveling. She wasn't accustomed to traveling. She was traveling by herself. She was traveling back home. This was many years ago when train travel was so widespread. That was the only way they had to get from one part of the country to the other. She was riding a train through the countryside. And she was scared as it was already. But off in the distance, she could look out of the train window as the train would weave through the country and through the hills. And she was in a particular area where there was a lot of bodies of water, rivers, lakes, sort of things. And as she looked off into the distance, she could look out the window over there. And she could see there was a body of water that was off in the distance. And in her little mind, she got so afraid. She said, there's no way our train's going to be able to make it across that. How are we going to make it? And her heart would go to pounding. And she was afraid. She was scared to death by it. And as she continued to approach it, her heart pounded even the more. Her fear even grew the more and the more and the more. She was afraid. And every time as she got close, just right before they would go out over that water, there would be a bridge that would appear. And that bridge would safely carry that train accompanying that young lady across that body of water. Time after time after time, every time they approached it, that fear would mount up within her heart. She didn't know what was next. But every time as they got ready to go out over that water, there would be a bridge that was there that the train would go across. So finally, after several times of this happened, as this experience was repeated over and over and over again, she finally just came to the point where she just leaned back in her seat and she took a breath of fresh air. And she just relaxed in confidence. But as she leaned back that final time, she said these words. Look at that. Somebody has built a bridge for us all the way home. Somebody has built a bridge for us all the way home. You and I are just riding on an old country train right now, aren't we? All we do is we see off in the distance over here as we weave through the different curves of life. We see the bodies of water, those different pitfalls that are out there that are going to bring us down. We see the dark trials of life. We see the struggles of life. We see the valley that is so deep, the water that is so cold and dangerous. But may I remind you that if you've been saved today and you're unified with Him, there is a God in heaven that has built a bridge that His children are going to cross all the way home, and we have nothing that we have to fear. All the people poured their heart out to their king, didn't they? They said, this is what we expect, and we're praying for you, O King. We're praying for you. One of our people invited Donald Trump to church this morning in North Georgia today. Reached out to him, invited him to church, sent me the post. We're praying for you. That's the way it ought to be. The people said, we're praying for you, but here's what we expect. If you want to keep our prayer, if you want to keep our support, the king said, wow, my goodness, I'll reply to that. And the king is here giving them, he said, look, I'm going to give you a comforting truth. I'm going to give you this complete trust that we've got, because I know that is going to bring a convincing triumph. They had no doubt. I know it's going to bring a convincing triumph. Look in verse number 8. We've almost made it through the whole chapter. Isn't that wonderful? Verse number 8. He says right here, look at it. They are brought down, talking about the enemies. The king is telling the people, hey, the enemies, they're going to be brought down and fallen, but we, God's people, are risen. And stand upright, save, Lord. Let the king hear us when we call. Now that's the people talking again. Did you get that? The king said, hey, the enemy has fallen. The battle has already been won. We made a decision to be unified together in lordship. And then the king responded. The people are saying, God save the king. God save the king. God save the king. The king is doing what's right. And so therefore the blessings of God fall upon the king. There was a convincing victory that followed him. And God did a mighty work and delivered His people. We, the people. Imagine what God would do in our country if today we made a choice that we were going to be this kind of people. We were going to get a hold of God and we were going to set some expectations, some accountability to our leadership and say, hey, lordship is all that matters. And we are going to honor God. There's also a story told about some seminary students. You can come on, Mickey, if you want to play whenever you're ready. Some seminary students that loved to play basketball every night. But the Bible school students, they couldn't play at the seminary because the seminary did not have a gymnasium. So they would have to go to a public high school not far from them, right across town. They would play basketball. Every night when they would get there, there was a janitor. An elderly man that would sit there and politely wait until they finished basketball so that custodian could clean the rest of the building, the gymnasium. And those seminary students would walk by and greet him every night. And every night this janitor, he would have his Bible out while he was waiting. He'd be sitting in a chair over there as all those seminary students passed. And he'd read the Bible. Well, one night, one of those hot-headed, know-it-all seminary students walked by and said, hey, Mr. Janitor, what you reading? He said, I'm reading the Bible, sir. Oh, yeah? What you reading in the Bible? The janitor replied and said, I'm reading in the book of Revelation, sir. The seminary student kind of chuckled, snarled at him a little bit, and said, really? Do you understand what the Revelations is telling you? He said, oh, yes, sir, I sure do understand it. The student replied and said again, what is it saying? That no name, non-educated, low-paid little janitor looked up at that seminary student. Says, it's just telling me that Jesus is going to win. Jesus is going to win. Jesus is going to win. The greatest commentary that can be given on the Revelation, on Psalm chapter 20 and the entire Bible, is simply that Jesus is going to win. Jesus is going to win. Your doctor may have said you got no hope whatsoever, but I'm telling you that when the dust settles, Jesus is going to win. Your family may have disowned you because you're trying your best to serve God, but when the dust settles, Jesus is going to win. You may be falling into a state of depression because of all that you're dealing with, but when the dust settles, Jesus is going to win. I don't know what you're dealing with in your life right now, but I'm telling you to let God have His way, trust Him completely, and say, I am giving you my life, Lord, and when the dust settles, Jesus is going to win. I don't know what's going to happen Tuesday, but I can tell you one thing. Jesus is going to win. Hey, stand to your feet. Maybe we, the people today, just need to find us a place and say, dear God, I need you to show me in a fresh way that Jesus is going to win.